Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown now?
Welcome, fourth listener, to this special rewind presentation of a Gen X grown-up backtrack. I'm John. Here with me, of course, are Mo and George. Hey, guys.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good. So we are going back in this rewind all the way to September 7th, 2017. Ooh, we're looking at the backtrack about the first video game console. And I think this is like the second or third backtrack we ever did.
Really?
All the way back. Yeah. So as old as we are, I don't know how much you're going to remember about it, but we talk about the first video game console we ever had.
Yeah. I don't remember it at all.
No, you don't. One thing I find interesting just in the history of Gen X grown up is that, and you guys probably have a different memory of how this worked out than I do, but we first started talking about doing a podcast and we're like, let's do it every other week. And then I had this idea that I'm like, oh, I hate waiting 2 weeks between episodes. People forget us. What if we did this extra, just a little episode talking about a little nostalgic thing, just 10 or 15 minutes. And you guys were like, all right, we can do that. Do you? Is that how it played out?
Because you sold it to us saying it'd be short, that they would be like 10, 15 minutes. Like, yeah, I can do another 10 minutes. That's fine.
Now we're recording for 3.5 goddamn hours on a Friday.
I know. I was like, I think we were suckered. I think he always knew they'd be long. He just sort of like suckered us in. Because they started short. They just got a little longer every time.
And he kept saying, like, I've always tried to get him to shorten up. And he's always like, well, we just need to talk until we're done. I'm like, no.
We're never done.
Well, and now I try to keep them to an hour. Because it used to be the main show would be an hour and the backtrack would be, you know, 15, 20 minutes. And it got to be the backtrack was the tail wagging the dog, right? The backtrack was like, you do more in the backtrack almost. It takes more research, certainly. This one was... We were poking around, like, what is a little thing we could talk about? In this case, all of us talk about the Atari 2600. I know that some of us had something else around there. I'm not going to spoil the backtrack because you're about to hear it.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll hear us. We are green podcasters in this episode.
You sound younger. It's kind of weird.
Sound? I don't know. I think we sound younger. Really? Well, we sound less experienced, most certainly.
Yeah. So.
Okay, I'll say that. Yeah, I'll say that. I'll say that instead.
Okay. All right. So, hey, fourth listener, thank you for popping in for this. We're just off for a couple of weeks here in the middle of summer. People take their vacations and stuff. And so today I'm happy to present this rewind of our first video game console backtrack. Here we go. Hey there. Welcome back, everyone, to the Gen X Grown-Up Backtrack. This is the podcast in between our regular episodes where we select a single item from our childhood, whether it's a game or a book or a film or an event that we remember fondly or has somehow shaped our history and how we became a Gen X grown-up. Joining us again, as always, we have George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And Mo.
Hey, everybody.
And I'm John. So, Mo, what is our topic for this backtrack?
Well, let me tell you, I mean, I'm pretty excited about this one because we're going to talk about our first video game console that we had at home. I know all three of us probably have some very, very fond memories of getting that first one and playing with it probably endlessly. And to start, mine is going to definitely take everyone way, way back. To start this,
well, you are the oldest, so of course.
Yeah, there you go. Since I'm the oldest, it makes most sense.
Have we verified his Gen X status yet? Because I'm still pretty sure he's baby boomer.
No. I submitted my birth certificate.
He's not even ragged edge. He's genuine. Okay. All
right. So for this one was back, God, I can't remember the year, but it was growing up, you know, we didn't have a ton of money, right? And my dad was very practical with gifts. You know, you got a lot of clothes, and anything we got was usually like a board games, that kind of stuff. But this one Christmas, totally unexpected. Christmas comes. Yeah, we open up. Oh, yeah, look, pants. Yay, underwear. Yay. And we open up one, and it's the first Pong console.
Wow.
And it's the one that had, like, Pong, and it had, like, that version of... They called it hockey, but it was just Pong with two paddles on each side. You know? and it had this other just very, very basic games. And you look at Pong today. I mean, all it had was the spin controller. Man, let me tell you, it was... getting that was just, it just blew us away because it had just come out. It was the first probably big thing to come out that, you know, you hook up to your TV, and we played that thing forever. for hours.
And with an RF modulator, right?
Yep.
Pong started out as a coin-op, right?
Oh, yeah, in bars.
That's right. Nolan Bushnell and Atari. Yep.
Yep.
So, you know, having it at home was just like, and then, and the one he got even had four controllers. Remember, I had three brothers. So, and there were some games that you could play with two people on each side. So they had like a tennis one you could play two with two people, you know, which was really just Pong with two people. But, you know, I mean, looking back now, I mean, it's probably stuff I could play on my watch from the complexity of it. But for the time, let me tell you, we were the talk of the neighborhood. You know, everybody wanted to hang out in our place. Everyone wanted to play it. It was definitely one of my
You were the cool kids, weren't you?
Yeah, we were the cool kids for a while.
For a while. You know, at the time.
Yeah, not forever, but it lasted. So, John, how about you?
So that really takes me back. So you talk about Pong. When I was growing up, we kept Sears and Roebuck in business. That was the place that we shopped. That was where I looked for everything that we bought. And for the longest time, I was eyeballing an Atari 2600. That's what I wanted. It was remarketed in Sears. It was the Sears Telegame system.
Oh,
it was identical.
That's right.
It was even the same mold, but it didn't say Atari on it. It said Sears Telegames. Same things. They played all the same games.
Yeah, they're just looking to sell as many markets
as possible. Yeah, it was rebranded. That's what I wanted. And I was begging. I was pestering my parents to get me this thing. They were like, you know, it's just going to be a fad. It's kind of expensive. And so
they
said,
go anywhere.
Tell you what, we're in Sears. Let's get you the Sears Telegames Pong. It hooks up to the TV just like the Atari. It plays games just like the Atari. And I was crestfallen. Like, that's not what I wanted, but I didn't want nothing. So I'm like, okay, thank you. So we got the Sears Telegames Pong, which was just, it was a single unit. The controllers were connected to the box. And so you had to sit close together in front of the TV, the two people, and you each had to, had the knobs right on the box. And you just played Pong.
I think I remember seeing
some pictures of it when I was younger, but I mean,
Well, you're the baby, George. So
you old guys. I don't know what you
anyway,
guys were doing.
Exactly.
City Miles.
That thing came home, and I played the living hell out of it. It was just Pong, but it was that semblance of that arcade experience in my house. And I don't know what it was, if it was how committed I was to wasting my life playing it, or how much I played it, or the fact that maybe my dad played it with me and realized. And I was selling my dad. I'm like, isn't this fun, Dad? The Atari has Pong and a bunch of other stuff. And isn't this fun, Dad? The Atari has color, not just black and white.
Oh, you're trying
and
to gateway
probably
it in,
my
huh?
dad's, you know, listen. He's like, you know, it sounds like the boy really wanted that other one. Within a week, we boxed it up. We took it back to the store. I would actually call that my starter console. My true first video game console, though, was the Atari 2600. Actually, the form of the Sears Telegames, though.
Yeah. Hey, nice. That was, I mean, the 2600, I mean, that was like, that's like the granddaddy of all console.
Well, that was actually my first video game console was the Atari 2600. I definitely grew up with probably the most iconic home console of the 70s and maybe even the 80s. I mean, it lasted for a long time. It really did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you remember when you got it? Do you remember the moment or the time that you actually got it? Was it Christmas?
It was Christmas. So I really had to put in the begging time in order to get something, just like most of the other kids out there. Like, if I wanted to
really invest.
Yeah. I mean, my parents could afford it, but they wanted to make sure that I worked for it when I begged. So I know I put in probably 7 months worth of every time we would go, we actually would go to Kmart. It was in the back of the Kmart. We would go back there and my mom would say, okay, you hang out here for a while and I'm going to go do our shopping for clothes and things that we needed for the house. And I would sit there for hours and play Combat because that was the only cartridge that they would load in the store. And they would have it, you know, behind the shelf, kind of behind a barrier, so you couldn't get to it. You couldn't reset it. If you wanted it reset, you had to call the guy over, and he would grumpily come over and fumble with a giant janitor key ring to unlock the little case and reset the game.
Oh, he was always happy to walk over and entertain a kid by opening up a cabinet to click reset.
And so for at least 6 or 7 months prior to that Christmas, just every chance I got. Hey, you know, you guys always complain that I don't come home on time from playing with my friends in the neighborhood. If I had this, I would be at home already because my friends would come over to our house.
Yeah, you didn't mention it. You would never leave your house, but that's okay.
It was nice. I got the Atari 2600 for Christmas. Once I opened that box, my parents knew to make sure that it was the last box I opened because nothing else was going to go on that Christmas.
All time nothing else matters at this point.
And it was the first thing that my father ever let me hook up electronically. I was the one who hooked it up to the television. I had
Your Atari was a gateway drug.
It was. I took the little RF modulator, unscrewed the screws on the back of the television and put it up in there, screwed it back and connected up.
Wow.
Got the joysticks and plugged them in and put combat in and turned it on. And I remember very specifically just sitting there staring at the screen with my mouth agape in awe of what I was seeing, because I had only played video games in the arcade. That was all you could do back then. Yeah.
This is in my house. Can you believe it?
And I was like,
wow,
look, there's like little things flying across the screen. They were the airplanes. And then there were tanks, you know, that were rolling across. And because combat, what did it come with? Like 150 million different variations of games or something? It was ridiculous.
Yeah, they had the airplane one. Yeah. They had the ricochet, and they had all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And there was actually switches on the
bullets bounce or invisible walls or invisible tanks. It was just variations on the programming. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember, for those listening that weren't around back then, there was no such thing as AI.
No.
There was no computer to play against.
No, you had to
There were no one-player games when it first began. Everything was a two-player game.
Yep,
yeah,
absolutely.
If you were playing two-player game, you were just...
with two joysticks.
You know, destroying the other opponent on and on and on. There was no fight back from it.
Who was just sitting still. Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah.
The original 2600, when it first came out, it was like, I think, $199.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like $200. Do you know what how much that would cost today, in today's dollars, adjusted for inflation?
What is it, like a grand? How much is that?
How much?
It would be a $786 console.
Wow.
Woo! Yeah.
I'd still pay for it.
Well, knowing that pain, I'll say again, thanks, Mom and Dad.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Knowing how much that cost.
Science, science, science! Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes, yes!
Woo!
Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.
The world's greatest arcade video games are now the world's greatest home video games. They're only from Atari.
Aside from the games themselves, I thought that the best part of that console was the joystick. To this day, I know this is probably heresy for most people playing games today, but that was my favorite joystick controller that I've ever used.
Oh, listen, you are not wrong. I was just going to bring that up. The CX40 model Atari joystick.
Holy cow, rubber
stick
with
the boot, the red button.
The red button in the upper left.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's...
Back in the day, we only had one button.
We had, and it was plenty. That's right.
Let me tell you, those joysticks back then, you would actually build up some arm strength having to move those things around. I mean, they were like tight.
I had a callus on the inside of my right thumb because that's how I wasn't one of the guys who held the top of the joystick. I had to like cradle it between the thumb and the index finger in that little part of your hand.
No, you didn't use the top of the joystick on the CX40.
Mm-mm.
You held it, assuming you're right-handed, you held it in your left hand, and then you put your right hand over the top of it, and you use your thumb and index finger to move it around.
Yep.
And you get that little callus.
Your left thumb was for the button.
Fire button. You got it. Absolutely. Yep. I had a box of parts for that, because if you got really, really rowdy with your controller, that rubber boot would pop off. It would come out of the little groove and pop off.
Mine did.
And also, the breadboard underneath was just like a little domes at contact. And
it would wear out.
I had a box of parts that I could disassemble and reassemble a CX-40 from parts if it broke.
And my friends down the street, they knew that I was a CX-40 repairman. When their joystick broke, they would come down to John's house and they would say, mine stopped working. And we'd open the box of junk and we'd cobble together one that did work well enough. We didn't have a tester. The only tester was you freaking plugged it in, you turned on combat to see if it worked. That's how you tested it. Oh, man.
There are times when I'm playing video games now and I'm like, this would be so much better with the Atari controller. I mean, I don't know why we need 6, 12 buttons and these little thumbsticks and D-pad. No. We just need an Atari 2600 controller. That's all we need.
Back in the day, I mean, that's all the processors could handle was four directions and a button. Any more than that, that's all these. That was the most these consoles could deal with.
I have a reproduction of the CX-40, but it's USB, and you could plug that in while you're playing an emulator, and you can get that feeling of an original Atari joystick. I've used it on occasion, and it's really nice.
I was going to ask, how does it work with some of the more modern games? Is it playable?
Well, there's not enough buttons for most games, but boy, if you're playing an Atari game, it is outstanding. There's no better way to fly.
Nice. Well, you need to put the link to wherever you bought that thing in the show notes in, because I'm going to be clicking that link as soon as this podcast publishes.
I will do that. Yep. I'll put a link down below where you can get your own.
I've had the Odyssey 3. I've had Intellivision, ColecoVision. We've had Xbox One, Xbox 360.
I had a Sega Genesis, I think.
Yeah, Dreamcast. I had one of those. The whole Nintendo lines from SNES all the way up to GameCube and Wii. I still, to this day, with all that history of all those different consoles, the one that I think the most fondly of is the Atari 2600.
I agree. I've had all of them. I've had good memories with all of those, and I like all of those, but it's just that Atari that I love, that I remember so fondly. I think it's because of, you know, it was that gateway to introducing me to how much fun games can be and something that I've never stopped enjoying.
And it marked a transition for me too. When I was younger, I was very much an outdoors child. I was playing baseball, playing with my friends out in the neighborhood and everything. But the Atari 2600 was the device that brought me into the home more often than I was outside of the home after that.
And now you're an IT professional.
Yeah. You might argue that the Atari 2600 is what helped me to pick my career now.
Jeez, how many games did they come out with for 2600?
Well, that's kind of a sore spot. I mean,
right? Because it's not all Atari games.
Well, the truckload of games, the shovelware, they called it, that just started loading on, since everyone can make an Atari game, that's kind of what's led to the game crash in the United States.
Oh, it's just too much.
Atari first-party games were pretty good, you know, and everybody blames E.T. for being the big thing. E.T. was just kind of like this straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of straws on that camel's back before E.T.
There were. There was just a wealth of shovelware garbage that just wasn't phenomenal. Anybody could put out anything. There was a Kool-Aid game that Kool-Aid gave away. There was a Chuck Wagon game that the dog food company gave away. And just there was a Crest game to brush your teeth. And they weren't fun games. They were just, we can make a cartridge that's a pack-in or a giveaway. You know, get so many box tops and send off.
It was all openware.
There were some companies that did make some quality stuff, right?
I mean, without a doubt, there were a lot of Atari games, Intellivision, Activision. There were a lot of those games that were top-notch, no doubt about it.
Activision was the cream of the crop,
sure,
to be sure.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of stuff. You know, there were a lot of third-party companies that just shoveled out anything because so many people had Atari. Mm-hmm. It was like, if you can just sell one to 0.1% of people, you make profit.
Well, an Atari 2600 probably had to be an 80% market share for that.
Oh, it's probably more than that, I would bet.
You guys had Pong.
Oh, it's
and
huge.
The Sears Pong thing, but I can't think of any other games that anybody even wanted besides the Atari 2600.
Everybody else was on the margins. Atari was the juggernaut. Intellivision was nipping at their heels. ColecoVision was nipping at their heels. You know, everybody wanted to beat Atari because they were the big game in town. And because they were so huge, it was almost like they were a victim of their own success. That's what everybody put shovelware on because they could make a quick buck. And that led to the perception that Atari games are crap. In reality, only crap Atari games were crap, but they eclipsed all the good games.
Only Atari makes the world's most popular home video games.
Hey, so if any of you guys out there who are listening, especially that fourth listener that we have, if you guys want to learn a little bit about what we've been talking about during this podcast, take a look at the show notes. We'll put links and information down for everything that we've covered in this podcast.
Also, don't forget to subscribe however you listen to your podcast, whether it's through Pocket Cast, Stitcher, or iTunes.
Yeah, right. And speaking of iTunes, if you are an iTunes listener, do us a favor. Pop open iTunes, go to us, and go to give us a review, just so people know that you listen and what you think about the show. It really helps other people find the show and helps us to grow.
And speaking of that interaction, if you guys ever want to let us know about a topic that you want us to cover for a future backtrack or in one of our standard podcasts that happen every 2 weeks, drop us a line via email at podcast@genxgrownup.com.
And don't forget to visit us on YouTube or on our site at genxgrownup.com.
That's right. We will be there all the time. Listen, guys, I have been amped talking about my first console. I think I'm going to go fire up Stella and play some Air Sea Battle right now.
Sounds awesome, man. You know, I was thinking that, you know, it'd be great also to hear about other people's first console stories.
I would love to hear about it. Yeah, drop us a line in our email.
Yep, absolutely.
We'll have a new podcast next week and a new backtrack in 2 weeks. So we'll see you back here then.
See you guys later.
All right, bye, everybody. No life, no fun.
Don't you know that you're a grown-up? Gen X Grown-Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washy shirts till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dino Tripodis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at whiskeybusinesspod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.